You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Me.
Hello, good evening. Welcome to the Scottish Rugby Podcast. It is myself, John Anderson, at the helm as per the usual at the moment. I am joined by my favourite guests. I've got Ian here. Ian, welcome.
How's it going?
How's it going? I'm going great. How you going?
I'm going all right.
You're going all right. Good man. Right. We'll depart from this Glaswegian chat and we'll come over to the classy duo themselves. We've also got Johnny McGinty with us. Good evening, Johnny.
You all right, Niebert?
And to finish us off here, oh, that's a terrible scene. We've got Craig Manson. Craig, how the hell are you?
What's up, Niebs?
I think when we get to the Patreons bit, I can tell you the way that I was met at the door by a certain young gentleman in Castlemilk when I was delivering a pizza a couple of weeks ago.
I couldn't say it on the TG version.
Yeah, it was quite spectacular.
Yeah, so what better segue than to, yes, you've found us on the Freeview channels.
If that's not a reason to pay your money, what is?
Exactly. Ian is going to tell us all about a young man from Castlemilk.
Get
your £3 a month in there ASAP. Come over to patreon.com/Scottish Rugby Podcast, where you can get exclusive content and get access to our exclusive Hands in the Ruck section, where, as Ian says, we go a little bit less PG, more...
We go a bit Rory Hughes.
Was it actually Rory Hughes you were delivering to?
Possibly son.
Possibly son. Come to the Patreon special and find out if Ian was in fact...
The Patreon Jeremy Kyle DNA test.
Was Ian smashed over the head by a Buckfast bottle by Rory Hughes? You will find out on Patreon tonight.
Guitar player from a band we toured with once said to me, "Do you think I'm a mink because I'm from Cashel Mulk?" And I was like, no, that's not the reason, no.
Yeah, we tend not to judge people on their locations. It's actions. Like Batman once said, it's your actions that define you. So, yes.
But did he do it in the voice?
Well, did Rory Hughes do it in the voice, Ian? That's what we really all want to find out. For those
Dude,
of you
what is the question?
Well, that those of you listening in audio, Ian has just pulled a face. So head over to patreon.com/Scottish Rugby Podcast and get yourself signed up. You can also head over to the Scottish Rugby blog, where you'll get lots of cool content. And we've got the URC coming back this week, so our writers will be picking that up. And there's been a few things over the autumn.
Johnny, I love you've just worded that like cool content and the URC.
Well, as you know, I've been fighting the good fight on the URC this evening, so I've got very excited on Twitter and Facebook and been battling with some of our South African brothers, which has been great.
So unlike
fun.
You.
I know, right? I never do this.
Well, I mean, who'd have thought that Anderson and South African rugby fans could be such a hotbed of confrontation?
I know, right?
Such shy, retiring types all round.
Honestly,
has Marco Mascotti been DMing you yet?
Not yet. No, we're getting there. We're not far off. Yeah, I mean, I'm such a shy boy that it is surprising. They clearly just don't know me. That's all it is. So I might do a Disney song to enlighten them. But that Disney song will have Razzie all over it. So we're not here to talk about South African rugby fans. No, we are here to talk about the Autumn Nations series and the final fixture for Scotland in what feels like a series that's lasted about 14 years. Obviously, there's fixtures this weekend as well. I didn't realise you could go either side of the window to get your allotted fourth test, but apparently you can. Or in Australia's case, we're going to play five because they're clearly just in a jolly.
Double windows. Bay windows.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like, you know those big hoosies you get, the big fancy hoosies with the posh windows, and you've got like the two of them. That's what Australia went for.
You've got panoramic sunroof.
Dave Rennie's panoramic sunroof. So Scotland played Argentina at the weekend. Myself, Johnny, Craig were there. We know that because we were in person. We said hello. We drank some beer. It was good. I'll come to you first, Johnny. Atmosphere at Murrayfield, decent crowd, decent sellout. Game didn't exactly start very well, but Scotland were okay.
Yeah, and got okay quickly enough that I think that the atmosphere didn't dip to the levels that it kind of has at times the last wee while. It was quite enjoyable for almost the whole day. So, and no Mexican wave.
Craig, were you delighted about this? You were mentioning it beforehand.
Yes, I had a standby pint of my produce sitting ready to throw for anyone that had a Mexican wave thought, but that was
sorry, when you say your that. Produce, do you mean like you were at a festival?
Yes, you want me
like
to
he was
say
watching Daphne and Celeste and Redding. That was it.
Yeah, so for those of you that don't know, Craig has a little bit of a bee in his bonnet regarding people going to the toilet at the rugby stadium. Johnny suggested he may have a clicker and shout kind of baseball style.
Yeah, honestly, if you're sitting beside, it's like sitting beside a baseball umpire. Every time someone gets up, he goes, "That's one." I went to the toilet before the game started and got in trouble for it. I deliberately went 5 minutes before the game started so I wouldn't upset him, and he's still got it.
He made us all sit down and then get all back up again so that he could go to the toilet. It was a performance.
I'm a showman, Craig.
Well, speaking of showman, there is no better place to start on this weekend's game than Finn Russell himself, Ian. Pulling out the full Finn Russell repertoire, had a hand in all 8 tries that Scotland scored. Where do we start?
I suppose at the start, it was, I mean, it was the Finn Russell show, wasn't it? It was everything that you hoped to see from him. Obviously, with Argentina going down to 14 men, it just means there's more space for him to exploit and use all his bag of tricks. And there was every single one, wasn't there? There was the pump fake, there was the running into space. You know, he would do that, find the outside shoulder, then flip from either hand. And then, of course, towards the end, there was the poke through for a try. It was consummate Finnness and a complete mockery of the suggestion that he's not the top 3 standoffs we had at the time.
Well, Johnny looks like he's eaten, so I'll come to Craig with this one. Is it indeed genius motivation from Townsend to get Finsanity up and running?
I see upstairs for thinking, downstairs for dancing, that's for sure. That's what Townsend has been thinking. He thought, you know, here's all of us thinking he's mad, he's out, Townsend out, it's terrible, it's awful. And actually he was just motivating Finn Russell to be the best Finn Russell possible. It's amazing.
Okay, you can take your SRU hat off now, Craig. And what do you really think?
I think Finn was just I can't say exactly what he was saying to Tooney until the patron comes on, but as far as I'm concerned, I'm sure he was just saying to Tooney that maybe he had made a mistake in letting him stay in France, and look what I can do, Dad, look what I can do. Can you see me, Daddy? Can you see me? That's exactly what he was thinking.
Yeah, I mean, Johnny, it doesn't help Gregor's case, really, doesn't it? It's one of those awkward situations where you've got, it's a results-driven business, and ultimately Scotland have got a very good result. But Finn Russell absolutely tearing trees up. And he'd done the same against the All Blacks as well. He was very, very, very good against the All Blacks. Him coming back in and then almost having that press conference after of Finn's now the man in charge. Finn was always the man in charge. Come on, guys, seriously.
Yeah. And I might have bought the it's a motivational ploy from Tooney if this was a one-off. if he hadn't left Adam Hastings out of the Six Nations for basically absolutely no reason, if he hadn't sent Finn home for having an extra beer for basically absolutely no reason, if he hadn't shown himself to have a consistent and horrendous track record of just woeful man management, I might accept it. But it's happened too much too often for me to think that this is his like grand plan. I think he's just not very good at management, essentially.
He's not very good at his job. Craig, Mike Blair said some interesting things after the game as well. Mike Blair's response to the Finn Russell show was to remind everyone that Blair Kinghorn had the most assists in the Northern Hemisphere last year, which seemed a bit silly considering nobody was talking about Blair Kinghorn.
Why were they not talking about Blair Kinghorn? He created
I think that's probably what Mike Blair was thinking, to be honest.
He created the last try. He was immediately when he came on, he created a try. Of course he's the why are we not talking about
I think him? There's a difference between creating a try and passing to a person to score a try. Like
yes,
we have to
he
get past
a try.
This.
It was wonderful.
Is Blair going to double down on the Kool-Aid? When Mike Blair gets the Scotland gig next year, should we expect BK10 to be front and centre?
There's no way at this moment in time that you're going to be putting anyone apart from Finn Russell in at 10 for every game start. What was interesting to see was Finn is looking far more rounded than I ever thought he would. He's now starting to take it to the line as well and doing slightly similar things to Blair Kinghorn as well, where he's coming through and getting the hands through and putting the ball around the back of players, etc. So I think I'm not saying anything about Blair and Finn's reacting to Blair. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that he's now, for me, it looks like when he's engaged Finn correctly, he's doing everything that we expect him to do and more. But I think, as I've said before many, many times, Blair Kinghorn is a phenomenal 10 for Edinburgh. He does a great job for us, and he works incredibly well within Mike Blair's setup and what he wants to do within the Edinburgh team. When Blair Kinghorn's brought into a team and plays the way of Mike Blair, he plays incredibly well. When he goes into a team and plays the way that he's told by Gregor Townsend, then that's a different story. So I think it's down to coaching. And I'm sure that's what Mike Blair was probably starting to talk about. And he's also given a little bit of backup to his player that has been, has been absolutely panned by every single Scotland fan that's got access to a keyboard over the last 4 weeks, and I think I think he's standing up for his player, which I agree with you.
Ian, I was going to pick up a point from Craig there, and Hamish has actually done it in the chat as well. Has always done that for Racing. So I think when Finn Russell broke through at Glasgow, he did take the ball to the line. Certainly, when he moved to France, it became a much bigger fixture. And actually, for me, what was evident the last two games, it felt like Finn Russell was being allowed to play like Finn Russell in that Scotland team. It didn't necessarily seem like he was shackled by the ghosts of Townsend past.
Yeah, sort of, we must kick everything's for territory. The big thing... The thing with Russell, like when he goes to the line, he's not the fastest man in the world, is he? He's not Kinghorn. You know, if you could put Kinghorn's pace into Finn Russell, you would have like the most phenomenally destructive rugby player the world has ever seen. But you know, Russell's just that, it's like Zidane, you know, he's that second of thought faster. So he finds that gap and he gets into that gap and he plays off it. And when you've got a pack like Racing, who are able to get you onto the front foot, it just allows him to either sit deep or go into, you know, play flat at the line. And he's adept at both of them because he is such a well-rounded player. And, you know, the Maverick tag, I saw somebody commented, I think it was on a rugby dump Facebook thing, and he said, you know, we need to throw out this Maverick tag. And we've been saying this for a while. You know, yes, he will throw the riskier pass, than anyone else in World War B because he knows he has the skill to be able to execute that.
He can.
You know, he won't always do it. He weighs up the options. And even sometimes if he goes, all right, I've only got a 30% chance of this, but I'm me. You know, I can do this.
30%. It's what it's like, that kicking graphic, isn't it? 30% chance of all kickers, 80% chance of Russell.
Yeah, or the you know, the expected scrum half chart, and you saw George Horn's tries. That's the Finn Russell chance of making that ridiculous pass. Yeah. And you know, Six Nations didn't go particularly well for him, or for the team in general. Possibly some Lions fatigue, but he's looked back on form, which is why it was so ridiculous that he was told he wasn't getting picked because of form. And, you know, I mean, you just look at the two games. I mean, defences are terrified of him. They don't know if they want to rush him or drift or what. They don't know what to do. And it's not because he doesn't know what he's going to do. He knows, like, he's got eight options at a time, doesn't he? And he knows he can pull them off. It's just like, they're like, right, what can we second guess to try and stop him? And it's allowed Tui Pilotu, who obviously I've been quite critical of, the fact he's playing 12 when he's not a 12. But, I mean, it's just, I mean, obviously they've played together a couple of times, Six Nations. But what it's allowed Tui Pilotu to do is just think about his run. He doesn't have to worry about anything else. So, like, he picks a run and Finn Russell will find him.
Johnny, you were going to come in there?
I was going to say that I kind of have to agree with what Hamish is saying in the comments about he has been better and he's been a more rounded player since he went to Racing. And as much as I love Glasgow, I have said this a few times, I think it was true of Johnny Gray when he went to Exeter as well. Quite a few of Scotland's players have left the Scottish pro teams, gone to more competitive leagues with better players around them and have got better because they're then able to work on other stuff because they don't have to do the level of work that they have to do to keep the Scottish teams competitive. Like Johnny Gray's tackle completion was ludicrous at Glasgow. My favourite Kevin Miller stat ever is that more people walked on the moon than evaded a tackle from Johnny Gray in the Pro 14. But all he ever did was tackle, because he was carrying the weight of that for the entire Glasgow team. When he went to Exeter, he's surrounded by, if we're being perfectly honest, as a team that won the Premiership of the European Cup, he was surrounded by better players. He wasn't relied on to do that as much. He was able to work on other things. I think the same's happened with Finn. And, you know, the more that more Scottish players go to that sort of different atmosphere, different setup, the better they seem to get. Anyone who does that, who goes away to the Premier or the top 14, comes back being able to work in different areas of their game because they're not carrying the weight so much as they are in the pro teams in the URC.
It's what we've always said, Craig, isn't it, about actually the Lions tours as well, and seeing Scotland get represented in Lions tours, surely that has an impact on just seeing better players and seeing how people prepare. Because we know the guys talk to each other in these camps. Obviously they do. Do you agree with that sentiment?
Sorry, yeah, my broadband's playing up there. Can you ask the question again? I missed.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, so players. Johnny's saying players going to better clubs, but also we've said that about the Lions as well. And Scotland having decent representation in the Lions, surely. Do you think Finn Russell and others have benefited from that?
It's a difficult one because you need to look at people like Hugh Jones and things like that have gone away and haven't maybe not got the chance probably to shine at a club. He did okay at Harlequins, but you know he was playing out of position and things like that as well at Harlequins, so it was a little bit different, I suppose. But I certainly, you know, you look at Matt Scott was on fire when he left Edinburgh, and he has been, well, he's a Premiership winner now, and he's played very, very well for Leicester. Hastings has blossomed down at Gloucester. He's done incredibly well. What I'm more worried about is I am concerned that Scotland's becoming more and more of a closed shop, and we've got all, you know, we're bringing in players from other areas to play in our teams, but are we dulling them down? And that's quite an interesting question, I suppose, if I say so myself. I think I would definitely agree with the opening up players' eyes and seeing. But, you know, it depends on the player, I guess, you know. It depends on the player.
Well, speaking of dulling down and opening players' eyes, shall we come on to the big talking point of the first half, Johnny? Red card for Argentina.
So I was thinking when you said speaking of dulling down, you were going to refer to me straight away.
Not at all, Ian. Not at all. So it's been funny, hasn't it, actually, the debate online after the red card, which... I mean, I'd be interested to get your take on the red card. I think I know where you stand on it, but it's been interesting hearing the debate afterwards, and there's definitely two camps of player safety and spectacle. And I know which camp you're in, Johnny, but first of all, talk me through the red card. What was your views?
From where we were sitting, it was about as stick on a red card as you get. You come from that sort of distance and swing an arm and you make contact with someone's head. I'm sorry, but that's a red card all day long. And we've said this until we're blue in the face. The spectacle is secondary to people being able to pick their kids up and recognise them in 15 years. Like, if you want to, A, have players who are able to live out their lives, and B, have a sport that exists without being litigated into oblivion, then if someone swings an arm into somebody's head with a run-up, you send them off. That's as simple as it gets.
But Ian, of course, there was the shouts for it ruined the game because it was so early on, so it should have been an orange card, or it was a bicep that hit them in the face.
See, now, I've seen some people say Scotland fans weren't complaining about biceps to the head when Glenn Young got a yellow card. Most of us said that was a red.
We did, yeah.
I didn't see many Scotland fans saying that it was any, you know, I think we all said, all right, Glenn Young got very, very lucky there. Yep. Thing with the Kramer one, it is completely needless. Richie is in no way is he going to be able to regain balance and even try and go for the jackal before the rock's formed, because other people, like, well, Kramer's coming in, he can go and form guard. And he flies in and smacks him with his arm right in his face. And you know exactly what's going to happen there. I mean, the only surprise was it was Lavanini. Lavanini was probably 5 yards back, like, God.
Oh, but he's got his fun as well.
You wait, Dixon.
We were just sitting here together, and it was so funny because, like, Johnny and I, like, with. Off went Kramer, and then off went the other player for 10 minutes. And then I went, oh my God, there's a red and a yellow card, and Lavanini's not gone off. And Johnny goes, there's still time yet. 20 seconds later, boom, off you go, Lavanini.
Off you go, say.
But, yeah. You know, for anyone that says that spectacle was affected by the red card, I'm sorry, Argentina scored a try when they had 12 men on the field. You know, you need to settle down a little bit, you know, because Argentina were dangerous all the way through that game. And Scotland allowed them to be dangerous all the way through that game. So
if they hadn't acted so mental all the way through, it could have been a game. With 14, it was still a game, and then they went, all right, let's just get another couple of lads in the minute. Open up all that space for Finn Russell. What's he going to do?
Nothing, because they've only got 12 men, so we'll go and try and butcher a 3-on-1 with Chris Harris. Scotland at their attacking, but the red card was a really funny one in terms of, like, so we were, like, directly kind of behind it, if you will. So Jamie Ritchie's backside was to us, and the play moved really fast on for it. I know it was a dream, it was absolutely fantastic, but the play moved on, and, like, the guys around us in the stand, I think we must have had a few of the just let the boys play brigade, because as soon as the hit, you could hear the hit from where we were, and I went, they're going to come back and look at that, that's a red card. And they're like, what's a red card? There's nothing there, nothing in it. It's just cleared them out, blah, blah, blah. Then it comes up on the big screen, and the boy's like, I mean, he's cleared them out a wee bit high. It's just a yellow. It's like, no, he's smashed him in the face. He's taken an opportunity. It looked to me like Kramer's eyed him up and went, here's an opportunity. Get a shot in on my opposite man, the Scotland captain. Let's go and get a shot in on him. And he's just come in and absolutely banjoed him. And like, for a professional rugby player to think you get away with that in this day and age is utterly madness. However, the refereeing this tournament has allowed people to think that again. And this is back to where we are with World Rugby's insane directives.
Is one of Jamie Ritchie's greatest plus points the fact that he's got a face that you really want to smash with your arm? Because that's twice now that someone's gone, I'm going to smash his face, and got a red card. And the thing is that Jamie just goes, brilliant, do it.
Aye, bring it on.
Aye, I mean, smash me in the face, let's see what happens.
Well,
go for this side, this is my good side with the metal plate in it.
I was going to say, I think his cheekbone's still made a plate of metal, isn't it? Yeah, honestly. But, you know, it did change the game. Argentina were dangerous to a certain extent, but I think we all came away from the game in a sort of strange way, thinking, and I don't know if it's the positivity of Scotland cutting loose and attacking relatively well at times, and we'll come on to that in a second, but we all kind of came away from the game, Craig, thinking Scotland would have won even if they hadn't went down to 14/13/12.
I think so. I think Finn Russell on Saturday was going to drag a win out of us completely, whether he had to do it himself or whether he engaged everyone else. I think he was on a mission on Saturday. The issue I have and what I was more disappointed in, if I'm going to pour some disappointment on the Scotland team, was the fact that, you know, they decided that, right, okay, there's 12 men on the field. I'm going to win this for the Scotland team. Yeah. No, it's going to be me that's going to win it for the Scotland team. And if they'd stuck to their game plan and actually calmed down and put the ball through the hands on a regular basis, we would have absolutely pummeled them. And I just find it very, very really difficult when teams get to that point where they go, oh, they're down to 12 men, I'm going to score a try. No, I'm going to score the try. And it backfires completely, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Ian Scotland definitely deserved to concede a try when Argentina were down to 12. And whisper it, Jack Dempsey completely at fault for the Argentina try with his Hollywood nonsense.
Yeah. Like Craig Friend, absolutely no need for that. It's one of these few times where that regularly peddled out phrase, trust the process, comes into play. You know, you just take your time because there's going to be space eventually. There was no need for Dempsey to throw that Hollywood pass. That was like Dave Rennie's first season at Glasgow.
That's the thing about Dempsey. He's a great, great club player, but I don't think he's an international nine.
An international nine, well, aye.
Yeah, sorry, eight.
I don't think he's an international nine that, either, man.
That was your big moment and you blew it.
That was like Kinghorn trying to fire a miss pass there. You absolutely blew it, mate. Blew it. It hit Johnny in the face.
I mean, I think it's 25.
So the only thing in mind.
Whoa! Yeah. Ian, proceed. Order.
25 caps for the Wallabies in a back row, which includes Hooper and Pocock, maybe suggest otherwise. And also,
some Wallabies at that time.
Well, hang on, Skooman, did he not take a wee while to get up to speed? Now look at him.
Some would argue he still is.
Yeah, now look at him throwing himself straight over tackles.
Yeah. Conceding penalties well and early. He wasn't tremendous.
No.
I don't think. There was a couple of times where he just did that thing that we've all seen him do at Glasgow, was put the heat down and just make meters, leg drive through people.
Yeah.
That was the Townsend play the fastest rugby in the world, offload everything, go mental kind of attitude. And it was completely unnecessary. It was beautifully finished by Argentina, you have to say. But also, I mean, it was such a beautifully Scottish thing that it's like, right, how can we absolutely butcher being three men up, you know, how can we screw this up in proper?
Why don't
we just wait till the 80th minute
and then give them the ball.
Do this. Yeah. It was spectacularly Scottish, but we got away with it. It's, you know, he'll learn from that. we go again.
He's such a young lad, too. You know, he's such a young lad that he needs to mature a little bit. And
Jack Dempsey did screw the pooch a wee bit with regards to that one. However, I do wonder, I was thinking about it afterwards, that number eight's under Townsend. Number eights tend not to be very good. Matt Fagerson has been probably the consistent eight in the Scotland jersey over the last while. And even then, Scotland fans don't think he's very good. Now, we all think he's very good. I'm not badging us in that, apart from idiot features in the corner there. Aye, waving his hands.
In the corner, you moron.
Yeah, he's a bit small.
I think you know exactly which corner I was talking about, Mr. Hayes. I was talking about the guy in the corner from Edinburgh who was waving his hands about. Right?
I think somebody got a bit hyperbolic. I can't remember who it was. Somebody on Twitter said that Fagerson is in like the top three number eights in the world, which is
that's bizarre.
Like, Conan, Aldrich, Savea, Faletau, Doris, like maybe top 10. But Fagerson has proven himself to be international class.
Yeah.
And I think he actually, I thought he played fine at six, once he moved to eight, I thought he actually got involved more and made more meters.
Hates his position. Hates his position. He's not naturally a six or a seven. You know, he's eight all day long.
Well, I've seen this kind of weird. There has been this switch now to. I mean, where's your blind side? You get some sixes who are the 5-6 Courtney Laws, the Toji blend, but then you also get your smaller 8-6s, sort of like standard, or Super Six Ryan Sweeney, or now Fagerson.
You just mentioned Ryan Sweeney in the same breath as CJ Stander and Matt Fagerson.
Exactly. We saw that.
I'm sure he'll be delighted about that.
You see, watch the space.
A nuggety wee 6-8. I think it's
Simmons as well. I think he's played 6 a couple of times.
Makes sense as well. I think it's fair to say, right, we're obviously hammering a wee bit on Jack Dempsey here, and you know, I think it's justified. I don't necessarily think.
Not at all.
I don't think he was. I don't think he was great at the weekend.
John's fine. He's got his tenor now. He's.
I don't think he was great at the weekend, but I think he has shown enough over this Open Series that he is a very valuable addition to the Scottish team. And again, it's that unseen work that Ian's mentioned. Those he didn't get the yards. That we don't necessarily we need that. We need that in our back row. So particularly if Hamish Watson's decided he's, you know, not going to be very good anymore. And we don't have any, you know, bold. I know Ian's prone faces at me.
You can't see that.
I think you'll find I have just said that. Deal, boys.
Oh my word!
Mish has never come back from South Africa.
I think John could be hanged for treason for that.
It really is. It's like there's going to be some sort of monument that you walk in Glasgow that you walk past and spit on, like the Heart of Midlothian.
The short-term memory of John saying that like Jack Dempsey is the answer if there's no Mish anymore, like Rory Darge isn't going to come back in 3 months and instantly slot right in anyway.
I think what I said was Dempsey's the answer just now to bring in a good back row, but Darge is 100% coming into that back row and will be taking Mish's place, whether Mish likes it or not. Mish could well be finding himself on the very twilight of his Scotland career.
And then Tom Gordon's going to be hiding behind the door, waiting to scare Rory Darge.
Oh, come on. Tom Gordon's not going anywhere near Scotland again.
Tom,
you're going to
hide behind the door, There's a point coming where Doohan's just going to punch Stuart Hogg in the face, and for one, am very excited. And, not that I don't love Hoggy, because I do. But the more he does this, the more it's going to get to the point where Doohan's just going to go,
I'm surprised he didn't do it the first time it happened. I'm surprised
he
didn't do it the first time.
Really just looked like he was going as well.
Yeah, just hugging him down by his neck, punching him repeatedly. Don't do it, Hoggy.
Just throw hot coffee in his face first and blind him.
So why is Blair Kinghorn playing 15 in the Six Nations? Well, our first choice 15 get ended by our winger after a jump scare where he blinded him with coffee and then pummeled him to death with his bare South African hands. We're also missing our first choice winger because he's in jail now.
Hoggy looks like he's been in Game of Thrones.
What, after the mountain has done Oberyn? Well, that's a visceral look for obvious.
Viscerating look for obvious.
Yeah, obviously the mesh thing. I'm playing a wee bit. Like I think Hamish Watson struggled for form. I wanted to see that back row that we had at the weekend. I don't think necessarily the game itself allowed for that back row, because I don't actually think. I think Matt Ferguson was okay. I don't, for all the well in the world. And I think Jamie Ritchie's getting all the love for standing up for his wee mate. But I don't think Jamie Ritchie was very good at the weekend either. And I think the Scotland back row was, if Argentina had kept 15 in the park, I think the Argentinian back row would have come out top in that battle, actually, which is concerning. Ian's pulling a face like he disagrees.
No, it's more of a general agreement. Like, I think over the autumn, I don't have the numbers to hand, but I felt we got turned over a lot against the All Blacks, especially. And there does seem to be the same old isolation, lack of clear out things. Sometimes it's because Doohan and Darcy go on mad mental runs which nobody can follow. Doohan thinks he can bludgeon everyone, Darcy thinks he can scamper between their legs.
I think Doohan thinks he can go sideways past everyone just now as well.
Just like create a sonic boom and move everyone out of the way. But then I think even Roy Lawson picked up on it, or John Barclay. It's like, who do you blame there? Is it the person sort of running away from these support lines, or people not reacting quick enough? I'd say that maybe that's the only slight issue with the locks we're picking, who aren't the most mobile. And again, without Watson, there is a sort of ruck leader fetcher.
That's how Xander got sent off against Wales. Mm. Because everyone was so slow getting to the breakdown that he went firing in. What he should have done is just let the ball be lost. But that's going to happen to us a lot when we don't get ruck support there quickly enough.
So I'm just looking at Kevin Miller's stats, friend of the podcast, Kevin Miller, who does the On Top of the Moon Glasgow Warriors stuff. He's obviously as much into a spreadsheet as I am. He's been looking at the penalty count over the Autumn series and things. And so there was 107 penalties conceded at Murrayfield between like the various teams playing. And of that, 49. So Scotland conceded 49 penalties in the four games. Now, I remember seeing after the All Blacks game, so Scotland conceded another 10 penalties at the weekend, but after the All Blacks games, so you're saying about 34 penalties. Of that 34, I believe 20 were ruck offences, breakdown offences. So, you know, like when you look at that, Scotland have been not great at the breakdown in this series.
I think it's coming though. Just I think I don't know if it was Johnny or it was Ian that made the point, but it is coming through fairly clear that our second row choices and sometimes our number six choices are not the quickest in rucks. You know, for example, Gilko's been regularly pinged for not rolling away in the ruck, and so the mobility. It's difficult to try and get someone who's between 6.5 and 7 foot tall, and whatever, 180 kilos or whatever they want to call themselves.
180 kilos.
Yeah. You know, falling around.
Godzilla's made his Scotland debut, has he?
Yeah, falling around. Oh, Godzilla! falling around the ruck. So it is difficult, but because the game is, the ruck speed is, we're constantly pushing for ruck speed and we're wanting the ball back as quick as we can. But it's I think what we are missing at the moment, and we used to do it, but it seems to be drifting away slightly, as our jackling prowesses seem to be being lost. Now, I don't know whether that is because we're being trained away from it so that we're not getting involved ourselves in the ruck so we can be up and defending as quick as we can and cover the field. Because Jamie Ritchie, when he did jackal, he was very, very good at it. But he didn't jackal as much as he used to, if I'm correct. There might be a stat that totally blows me out of the water, but on a visible look, watching the game.
I agree. He played more like a 6 playing 7 than a 7 playing 7.
Yeah. I think there's a slight game planning issue to the ruck problem as well, because I think our centres in particular have kind of been, in the last couple of years, have been a bit like ruck dodgers quite a lot. And they're the people who should be in position to secure the ball. So if Darcy or Duhigg goes on a wild run, you'd expect there to be a centre there that could secure the ball. And I don't think that any of our centres are scared of rucks. I think they're probably being game-planned because we're looking for such fast ball to get themselves set up ready for the next phase, which is pointless if you're going to lose the ball in the breakdown before you get to that phase. Like, it's something that probably needs to be looked at.
And also, you got to look, I'm sorry, but, and this is, I'm going to say something negative about Duhan, and I don't like it, but if he runs sideways once, he did it 3 times, and on my side of things, that is, there's chaos and there's just sheer, disregard for any type of game plan whatsoever. To run all the way sideways, you're taking away your other teammate's space. You're you may be looking for gaps, but the more you run sideways, the less gaps you're going to find. You know, with someone who's as big and as fast as Duhan, just take the ball into contact, mate. You know, if there's two boys there looking to defend, suck them in by battering into them. And that's where I struggle a little bit,
Ian, you wanted to come in on that?
Yeah, I was going to say, like Craig was saying, all you're doing, Duhan can topple over a man, make himself 10, 50 metres, but instead he's just turning himself back into traffic and creating the possibility of crossing and obstruction. Another thing, I thought Fraser Brown played well at the weekend, but as Hamish has commented there on Facebook, now, I didn't see Fraser Brown going over the ball, and that was something that he used to specifically be included in Scotland teams for, even playing as a back row, for example, in the American tours, or like Johnny was saying, a centre there to clear out. Alex Dunbar used to be in there getting hands over ball all the time. So you didn't need Barkley or Watson to be going to go jackal. They could go and make the tackles. They'd scamper about, hit the person, and then Brown or Dunbar would be in straight over the top of it.
So let's move away from the back row just now. We've actually touched on centres. Let's talk about the centres just now, Johnny. Tupelotu and Harris at the weekend, with Cameron Redpath coming off the bench. There's a lot of discussion in Scotland and beyond regarding that 13 jersey in particular, but actually I think both jerseys are up for debate. How do you think the centres went at the weekend, and who would you like to see in the 12 jersey come the Six Nations?
I am very, very close to being on board with Tupelotu. What Ian said earlier is bang on. Having Finn in the team has given him a whole new lease of life, but actually the two games before Finn, he had two really good games of those as well. I think he's put down 4 really, really solid performances at 12. And, it's not somebody who's played a lot. And he has been really, really good. I think Harris is on slightly more of a shuggly peg than he was before. He's not the test standard lion that he was 18 months ago, I don't think. I don't know why not. I don't know what's changed. But he is still the defensive leader that we need. I'm almost on to Tupelotu and Harris as our centres for the Six Nations. Cam Redpath was good when he came on this week, but I had a lot of problems with him in the Fiji game. I think he believed his own hype, because there were people before that Fiji game said, "Oh, Cam Redpath's what we've been waiting for. He's the one." And he was, I think, pretty disappointing personally.
I would go a step further. I think Redpath done okay when he came on. However, I think Cam Redpath is similar to what we were saying in the stand against Fiji, actually. I think Cam Redpath seems to think that he's four stone heavier. And I don't know what it is about. Like, so he's obviously come into the Scotland team as a distributing, kicking option, able to play passes, second distributor, etc., etc. And that's how he played against England in that game that we all remember, you know. He's come into the team and he seems to be desperate to crash ball up. And for me, is that a failure of coaching? Like, is he being told to do that, or is he taking that upon himself? Because he's not a crash ball 12 and never will be, for all the will in the world. He's not that type of 12. And that's almost in his positive that he's not that 12. But he seems to be playing that well. So I came into the series wanting Redpath to be very, very good. I'm now very much sitting here going, well, actually, Tuipulotu and Sam Johnson play very similar rugby. I think that's the 12 Scotland need. One of them.
I think it's absolutely bonkers that we didn't see any of Rory Hutchinson.
That's a massive, massive point well made. And yes,
It's difficult though, because if you look at Northampton Saints, and you look at your Cammy Redpath playing at Bath, like Cammy Redpath, ever since he moved from Sale to Bath, has been a revelation, and he has been a very, very good player up until he picked up his injury that then forced him out after the end of the Scotland England game. He was a far better player at Bath than he was anywhere else. And I think the Hutchie has a beautiful gait on him. He's got a lovely pass on him. He comes on and breaks lines really, really well. The problem is that's within the Northampton Saints setup. Also, their defence isn't very good at Northampton Saints. And so, you know, they seem to be at a situation where when they want to play, they play as a sort of, we're going to win by scoring more tries than you do. And it's the same with Harlequins. So I think you have to, there's something about Hutchison that's not lighting Tooney's fire. Now, obviously, we can all sit here and go, well, Tooney's really right about all of the things, isn't he? Because, you know, he's quite obviously, he's got his finger on the pulse with that. But I think I'm a bit still on the fence with Tuipulotu. I think I was more convinced by Tuipulotu on Saturday than I've ever been. But I still like Cammy Redpath, and I think I would like to see more.
Six Nations tomorrow, Craig. Six Nations kicks off tomorrow. Who do you put in the 12 jersey?
Well, currently, right now, because of game time, etc., and what we've seen, I think it's going to be Tuipulotu that's going to start.
But who would you want in the 12 jersey?
I would like to see more creative play, so I would like to see Redpath brought in a little bit more. But then I would.
Of the four centre options, who do you think is the heaviest?
Chris Harris, potentially.
Of the four 12 options.
Oh, the four 12 options.
So, Tuipulotu, Redpath, Johnson, Hutchinson, who do you think is the heaviest?
You would imagine Johnson, wouldn't you?
I'm going Johnson.
That is Sammy J is 10 kilos heavier than Tuipulotu and 20 kilos heavier.
I mean, Tuipulotu's a pretty stocky little gent as well, isn't he? So that's surprising. But
Samaje is a wee bit taller, I think. And also,
a very little bit, yeah.
And I don't know if you saw the Warriors picture of them, like, on the pitch together.
Yeah.
So Samaje's kicking about just as, you know.
Just a sleeveless number.
Best shorts, mate. Yeah.
Tuipulotu's kitted up like an Arctic warrior. So the other centre position, Ian, obviously, Chris Harris has come in for a lot of flack over the weekend. Again, seems to be most fans, we know fans have their opinions on these things. it seems to be a bit of a stopper in the Scotland attack. Let's call it that. There was one moment in the game at the weekend where, almost butchering a 3-on-1. Darcy Graham, he owed him a pint after that for sure, because Darcy Graham has rescued him from that one. So if Harris, do you think Harris is still the choice? And if not, who?
The thing with Harris is it's the defensive quality. Now, it's like against the All Blacks, like, the first time I watched, obviously, you know, I had to bolt at half-time and go to work. But I remember in the first half thinking, he's not touched the ball in attack. He never, I don't think, at any stage did he get involved in attack, Chris Harris against the All Blacks. But then you watch it back and you know, obviously they'd scored two tries pretty quickly, but after that, he was getting into those channels and he's just a nuisance to play against.
Yeah, and John, you and I were saying during the Fiji game, how much messier that would have been if Chris Harris hadn't been there, because he was up like a shot in the 13 channel and drifting everyone back inside. Like there's no way that Fiji attack was getting past him ever. No. The problem that they had was that he was driving attackers back inside where they were hitting contact and then making 5 or 6 meters, and then he was having to come back round to defend the game line again. But he shut down. Every single, like, the speed he came up with was incredible. And I don't know, I've not watched it back, the Fiji game, so I don't know how much of it you saw on the TV.
The
speed that he was coming up in the outside channel was unbelievable.
Yeah. There's a section in that first half that we picked out, and I've mentioned it a couple of times in the pod, that there's three consecutive situations where he has come out the line, stepped in, blocked the channel, pushed him back inside, repeat. And it's a masterclass in defence.
And there's nobody that's doing that. Nobody else is going to do that for Scotland.
Mark Bennett, Ian?
A nuggety enough defender, but without that same reading. Obviously, better in attack. We all know what Mark Bennett's like best thing is. The fact that he can, you know, he can jump past people in a phone box. Yeah. And I love Mark Bennett, but then it's all about balance, isn't it? You know,
so
do you take out Chris Harris and then put in Jones or Bennett, who we know are lethal runners, but then they are not going to be able to shut down counter-attacks the way he can.
So with the view that we're not getting out of Rugby World Cup group this time anyway, would it be advisable to just go out and enjoy ourselves and actually have Hugh Jones in the 13 shirt?
Nah, we can beat one of them. As long as we beat one of them, that's fine. And you know who one of them, I mean. I'd particularly prefer to beat Ireland, I think.
I don't know. After today, I would be really inclined to want to beat South Africa.
Nah, but, you know, well, I think we'll get on to Hansen Ruck, certain former Scotland coach.
Oh, that was fabulous. Yeah, we will get on to that. We are fast approaching the hour now. So let's just wrap up the autumn quickly. We'll do a proper sort of in-depth look at it in due course. But, Johnny, two wins out of four, a close defeat to Australia, obviously a circus around the Scottish team, but all's well that ends well, right?
The stuff that happened off the pitch gives me much more cause for concern than the results or the performances. Australia was kind of what I expected. I thought it could have gone either way. On another day, we might have won that. The All Blacks' performance was much better, I think, than anyone expected. The other two, I was pleased to win the Argentina game because that was a real banana skin. The Fiji one, as much as we didn't play well, was a bit of a formality. Whatever is happening in the camp needs to be sorted, and it needs to be sorted quickly because way too many headlines for the last month were not about the games, and that's a problem.
Craig, what's your takeaway from the autumn?
I can only echo Johnny, to be honest with you. I think there's still question marks over some of the senior players, the players that have been there a long time. There's certainly players there that, you know, that have had a difficult Autumn Nations. There's also players that have come back into the squad that you may have written off, have had a fantastic Autumn Nations as well. So take a bow, Richie Gray and Fraser Brown, you know, that really, really fantastic games. Finn Russell's been... The problem I have, you know, when everyone's turning around and going, see, Finn Russell should have been there all the time. Now, I totally agree. I think he's been absolutely majestic for the last two games, and he helped Scotland win those games. In fact, he was the linchpin. But he hasn't been given the full four games. And as we know with Finn, sometimes he can have a quiet game. And so, to really put doubts away from everybody's minds, he needs a run of four games to go, actually, look at me, I can run this completely and utterly and 100%. Now, I'm not a doubter, I think he can, but, there is that out there. But I think the big look back about the Autumn Nations now is the SRU's communication process and how they manage both their lead coach and their players and their own self as well.
Ian, you get any more to add to that?
Well, maybe a couple of things. No, it was very. It's one of them. It should have been better. It could have been better. You know, spanking Argentina has put a nice gloss on it. Particularly, you know, seeing us how close we ran them in the three test series over the summer. But again, too much drama. I thought once he stopped moaning about his haircut, I thought Stuart Hogg looked back to being in pretty good form. Darcy Graham is just phenomenal.
We've not even talked to Darcy.
Last week I said, I looked at the stats and I was like, look, man, he's going to end up becoming the top of the Hoik, not at least the top of Scotland's, at least top of Hoik, if not top Scotland's top try scorer. And I think Jimmy Lee said at the start of the weekend, 12 tries in 9 games across all competitions.
170 metres made at the weekend.
Yeah, it's obscene. I mean, 12 tries in 9 games. I think he's Will Jordan in Super Rugby. this is one of these guys that once he learns a wee bit more tactical news, he's still only 25. He's already lethal. He's going to just be bloody terrifying. So I think there's a lot of positive takes from the backline stuff. And I think the pack did all right. You know, I don't think we didn't get hammered in any scrums. The line out was a bit shaky first game or two, wasn't it? But, you know, once you get... Well, that was the thing with bringing Richie Gray back, was to sort that mess out. And nearly said, I swear.
We're almost there, Ian. We're fast approaching Patreon.
Otherwise, it's a sort of B-minus C kind of report card. We wanted 2 out of 4. It could have been better. There's certain positives, but it's the same old things with the negatives.
I'm not going to repeat what you guys have said because I actually agree completely with absolutely everything that's been said. I'm, believe it or not, going to finish on the positive, but also slightly a negative. My takeaway from the Autumn, the Siobhan Catkin tribute on the 8th minute. Again, massive work from Alan McDonald and also Ian Wallace getting involved in it as well, really promoting this across all the channels that they've got access to. And, you know, again, at the weekend, there was a lot of people up and clapping. A little bit unfortunate that Scotland were attacking at the time, so it was kind of usurped a wee bit by that, but that was inevitably going to happen over the Autumn. But for me, it was really disappointing in that we've got that protest that's been going to protest. We'll call it what it is. It is. It's a stand-up. It's a memory for Siobhan, but also it is a commentary on the reaction of the SRU to it. We've got, you know, there was lots of people in the crowd around me saying at the time, we've got, you know, a memorial at the start of the game, a minute silence for former team doctor. But we're also, but you know, the difference is that's a white male. A white old guy. And it was quite a juxtaposition for me. So but I think, you know, there's a lot of work still to be done with the Siobhan Cattigan stuff. I think the guys are really keen for it to continue in the Six Nations, so watch a space with it. To finish on the absolute positive before we go into our Patreon, brilliant from Anna. You're absolutely right. At least you didn't get hammered by the All Blacks then. Lose to Georgia. Some perspective, please, lads. Oh, I have been so kind to Wales this week. I have not even touched that because, do you know what? It's like, you know what? You know, like, when it's not even sport anymore. When it's not even worth your while, like riling people anymore. It's like you're literally poking desperate, desolate people.
I mean, that's even worse. It's like pity. It's like,
I've got to hold my hands up and say, I have been quite unkind to Wales.
You chose violence
specifically, quite unkind to Anna about her, like, last couple of weeks.
I can't believe I just described what it being a pity poke. That's not acceptable. Yeah, so at least we're not Wales, hey guys. They've got a lot of work to do as well. But for now, we're going to move over to Patreon. Obviously, if you're a Patreon, please hang about with us. We are going to cut loose and get ready to set this world to rights. But for now, it is goodbye from me and goodbye from Ian, Johnny, and Craig.
Cheery bye.
Bye.